Good morning and welcome to the House Judiciary Committee on Criminal Law. I have a couple of preliminary matters. Next week, we will return to the 8:30 a.m. startup time because we will have finished the hard push on House bills and we will begin the genteel push on Senate bills. We have a lot less Senate bills. We already dealt with Senate bills earlier in the session, actually, as we went along. We only stopped doing that about 3 weeks ago. So as of right now, we only have about a dozen Senate bills. And as we hear Senate bills, if they're clean, they're going to be set for hearing and work session. And if we're satisfied with Senate bills as they come up, we may move right into work session on some of them. On the other hand, if we have any concerns, obviously, we'll set them over for a further work session. But I want everybody to have a heads up about that because I'm encouraging the Senate to let them know that virtually every bill that we get from the Senate will be heard, and then we'll see if we're comfortable with it. We figure they've been filtered over there, so we'll try to move pretty swiftly on the Senate bills that come over. There's two that have wonderful relating clauses, and they may be held for a little while, just in case, for remedial action.
Go back to 8:30.
8:30 starting Monday. So those of you who have to commute can pick up that extra half hour. We are going to try to follow the overall agenda listing. And, again, I won't make the mistake I made a few days ago where I have my own little cheat sheet with my notes on it, or our notes, and I found out the last time I used that I wasn't following the sequence on this. We will pull some bills out of sequence as reasons come up, but otherwise we'll just follow this. And I'll mention that. Well, I think President Fresenski already knew about the 8:30 startup starting next week, so we might want to mention that to Representative Simmons and Representative Hansen later on so they'll know, too. In case somebody shows up at 8, I don't want them to be offended. Our first bill up is House Bill 2807. And, Council, before we go into a work session, my notes show that there was a work group meeting today.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. I believe the Representative Lewis has put that together, and I was contacted by her office yesterday about that.
And so they are not ready. And another reason you'll see some things set that aren't ready is we have the 36-hour rule. We have to try to anticipate what might be ready to explain to folks, and we hate to find that we're ready and don't have the work session set. So on 2807, that will be set over. Next on our list is 2808. We have had amendments requested, and we are advised they will be ready Thursday or Friday. And Mr. Horton, I'm going to interrupt for a moment and ask, would you describe the amendments that we're working on 2808 so folks will have an idea?
I certainly will, Mr. Chairman, and I'll first say that they are a little bit complicated, so I may be leaving out some details. But generally what the amendments that have been requested to Legislative Council do is as follows. They require registration, in addition to, of course, the current law that requires registration for sex offenders, it requires registration for two classes of criminals. One class is violent felons, and then another class is what is called chronic neighborhood offenders. The violent felons can be broken into two groups. One is persons who commit murder, aggravated murder, or attempted aggravated murder. Those persons are required to register for life. However, after 10 years following the date of their release from prison, they do have an opportunity to petition the Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision, and they have the burden of proving that they've been rehabilitated. Other offenders, such as those convicted of assault, one, attempted assault, one, robbery, and some other violent felonies may be required to register as a violent and dangerous offender. Now, the other group, chronic neighborhood offenders, consists of people who are on their third or subsequent conviction for burglary one, which is entering into a residence with the intent to commit a crime, auto theft, unauthorized use of a vehicle, manufacturing drugs, stealing drugs, or robbery in the first or second degree. Those persons are also required to register. Now, what the bill does, or the amendments would do, is instead of the current notification system, it requires the Oregon State Police to set up a website. And the information, some of the information about the offenders would be on the website, their name, their photo, not their address, their date of birth, a brief description of the type of offense they committed, however, no information about the victim, of course, would be available to protect the victim. And there is also an appeals process that those offenders can go through after a certain amount of time so that they do not have to register. I believe the presumptive period of registration is for 5 years.
So we'll have a chance to see those perhaps on Thursday.
Yes.
And so we'll take a look after. Yes.
Are we still just on dash twos on that one?
The new amendments would replace the dash twos.
Okay.
So that's where we are on 2808. I know we have some amendments in on 304. I'm skipping over 2996 for a minute, but 3047, did we have amendments come in this morning?
We did, as a matter of fact, Mr. Chairman.
Let's take a look at those. Let's go into work session on 3047. And I understand that Larry Oglesby from Marion County is here. And we would appreciate your assistance, Mr. Oglesby, to these dash one amendments to 3047. If you would explain them to us, please.
Good morning, Chairman and members of the committee. Larry Oglesby, Marion County Juvenile Department, representing the Juvenile Directors Association. I provided this brief written testimony, and I'll just summarize this bill. At first hearing, resulted in a work group. We went off and met on the original bill. There were two issues. One was a much broader policy question, which we thought was important to deal with, but due to the fiscal implications and complexity, probably can't do it during the session. The second issue, however, is more immediate, and we wanted to address, and that's the one that's subject to the amendment. It basically does one thing, which is to clarify that the time that a youth can be committed to a youth correction facility is a specific length of time, i.e. 1, 5, 10, or 20 years, as opposed to the time that an adult could serve, which could be interpreted to be reduced by sentencing guidelines, which would be a shorter period of time. The public policy implications are premature release from the training schools, failure to complete treatment programs, and public safety. So we believe it's important to go ahead and pass this bill this session.
Now, Mr. Oglesby, when you say there is a work group, could you tell us who were in the work group?
Certainly. The work group included Karen Brazeau of the Oregon Youth Authority, Nancy Miller, State Court Administrator's Office, Kathy Osborne from the Juvenile Rights Project, and Carl Myers and myself representing the Juvenile Directors.
And is there concurrence among all members of the work group about this amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there is.
Representative Brzezanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for having that last part brought up. Saves me some questions. I went through this last night, Larry, and I guess the only thing is I didn't see anything in here regarding Class C or B misdemeanors, and it seems to me that if we're going to be including the what would be the maximum for the indeterminate sentence, should we or should we not have those listed in there, too?
Mr. Chair, Representative Brzezanski, you can only be committed to a state youth correctional facility for a misdemeanor and above.
Thank you.
Any further questions from Mr. Oglesby?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Brzezanski.
If there's not anyone else that could be called up, I'll make a motion.
Go ahead, please.
Move the dash ones and to Bill 3047.
Representative Brzezanski moves adoption of the dash one amendments to House Bill 3047. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, the dash one amendments are adopted. Representative Brzezanski.
Move the bill before with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Very well. Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing no objection, House Bill 3047 is adopted as amended and sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Brzezanski, would you like to be the carrier?
Sure.
All right, Representative Brzezanski will be the carrier on 3047. Thank you. We'll next move to House Bill 2488 and go into work session on House Bill 2488. I would welcome up Michael Tate from the Department of Corrections. And Mr. Tate, do you have anyone else that you want to bring up with you? Mr. Tate, we have two versions of the 2488 amendments. There is the stay with the Department of Justice for legal representation set of amendments, and there is the go out and find a private representative if you wish set of amendments. We also have a letter from David Schuman, Deputy Attorney General, describing how the Department of Justice proposes to proceed with legal services for the Department of Corrections, assuming we adopt the stay with Department of Justice version.
Mr. Chair, could you tell us which ones are which? Just
yes. In fact, I'm not even sure myself. I had to go back.
If I might.
Three and four, Mr. Tafe.
For the record, my name is Michael Tafe, Administrator of the Inmate Work Program for the Department of Corrections. Mr. Chair, Representative Brzezanski, the 2488-4 is the model, and in Section 20, it supports the letter that the chair referenced from the AG offering counsel to be stationed in-house from the AG.
Those dash fours are the DOJ.
DOJ representation.
And that is, shall we say, the compromise model that worked out between Department of Corrections and Department of Justice?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Do you recommend the dash four version?
I do.
Are there... Go ahead.
I was going to say, I just want to put this on the record. I'm glad they do, because the reality is I don't think we can go out and hire a private attorney for, I guess the rate's going to be what, $91 an hour to do this type of work. And so I think it's a wise one. Plus, I also believe that since the state is going to be in the position to need to be defended, that I'd rather have the Department of Justice on the hook for that representation and on the inside loop. So if it's appropriate, I'll be willing to move the dash fours.
And let me ask Mr. Tate just before that. Now, the dash ones, are they still needed, or are they supervened by the dash fours? There's a one sheet. This looks like it really just made a minor change. It looks like dash four.
The dash four would replace dash ones.
Is there anything in the dash four that causes a problem for the Department of Corrections from your perspective in carrying out?
We don't believe so, Mr. Chair, and it has been relatively thoroughly reviewed by DOJ. And, in fact, a great deal of the substance of this now has been crafted by DOJ attorneys, so I don't believe there are any substantive issues there. There are some language issues, and I think DOJ is preparing a list of potential amendments, but because of the late arrival of these, they're prepared to deal with that in the Senate side.
This has to go to Ways and Means anyway, or not? Yes, it does. Unless we fill in the blanks.
There's potential for it to go to Ways and Means.
We do have a referral, and we do have allocation of funds. Unless we pull that out, we would have to send it to Ways and Means. Are you comfortable with us sending this to Ways and Means?
I'm comfortable with whatever the committee decides.
Oh, boy, that was a good answer. What I'm getting at is it's pretty clear that we need to send it to Ways and Means to do the appropriations. The one thing we could do is try to back out of appropriations and recraft it without that, but it seems that the most expeditious thing is to send it to Ways and Means and let them process that. And since Representative Prozanski and I are both on the Public Safety Subcommittee in Ways and Means, if there's any technical changes, I'm sure we could handle those there also. So do I understand that if we use the dash four, that the Department of Corrections and the Department of Justice are comfortable with us proceeding?
Yes.
All right. President Prozanski.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the dash fours into the bill, House Bill 2488.
Colleagues, Representative Prozanski moves adoption of the dash four amendments to House Bill 2488. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bowman.
I just have some, I have a question about Section 3 of the original bill. Has that been eliminated in the dash four amendments, or?
Yes.
Has it been? It has been eliminated.
Yes.
Okay.
Any other discussion? Is there any objection to the motion to adopt the dash four amendments? Seeing no objection, the dash four amendments are adopted. Representative Prozanski, do you move referral?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would make the motion to refer House Bill 2488 as amended by the committee to Ways and Means.
Is that with a due pass recommendation?
Yes, with a due pass recommendation.
All right. Colleagues, you've heard that motion. Is there debate? Is there objection?
I object, Mr. Chair.
President Bowman objects. Please call the roll.
Representative Bowman?
No.
Representative Gianella?
Aye.
Representative Hansen?
Can I pass for a second?
Sure.
Pass.
Go ahead with the next name.
President.
No.
Aye.
Vice Chair Prozanski?
Aye.
We'll wait for Representative Hansen. You can call Representative Hansen when he's ready.
Okay.
Yes. Representative Hansen votes aye.
Chair Mannix?
Aye. Motion is adopted. House Bill 2488 as amended is sent to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Thank you, Mr. Tate, and I also thank Mr. Cook, who is here to watch the proceeding. This closes the work session on House Bill 2488. Let's see here. Next, we have House Bill 2096. Counsel, we're all going to work session 2096. Tell us where we are, please.
Mr. Chairman, we have the dash one and the dash two amendments before the committee. I believe this is the first time that the committee has had the dash two amendments before it. And what the dash two amendments do is change the current length of time after which a conviction can be expunged from 3 to 5 years for a misdemeanor and for a Class C felony from, well, it changes it to 10 years. I believe the current length of time is 3 years.
And I believe the dash one, Representative Przanski, were you the proponent of the dash one amendments?
Mr. Chair, I was the, let's say, conduit for dash ones to be drafted. This is one that, if the chair remembers, there was some decisions as to whether we were going to hear the bill, and in my discussions with the Standard and Practices Commission, that this is what I would feel most comfortable with as to having the check and balance. The bottom line, I guess, is for everyone to understand, this would be a significant policy change for the state if we did open this, or if we adopted the dash ones. Basically, now, when a person's records have been expunged, they have been sealed, and they're not, let's say, open after that date, I guess there may be an exception if the court for good cause could be shown that they would be able to open them up, but the normal policy is that you don't see that happen. What the dash ones would allow for is that the licensing boards, in fact, any professional licensing agency, not just the standard practicing for schools, would be able to petition the court to open up these records, and then there would be what's known as an in-camera inspection, and that is where the court would look at the records and determine whether or not they should be made available to the petitioner for their review for their needs. The reason that this has come before us is that there's been some discussions that they would like to be able to open up records to see regarding police reports as to any type of previous conduct that may be in someone's past before they were licensed for a profession. Specifically, in the case that we were talking about was with people, I guess, applying to be teachers. The concerns that were raised, I guess we had an individual that came in last week and talked about that this evidence could actually be used in an administrative hearing as qualified hearsay information that is normally accepted through that type of administrative process. So that's what the dash one, I think, would accomplish. And so the question I would just pose to us is whether or not we want to make this shift in policy.
All right. I understand we have a representative of the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission here along with Assistant Attorney General McKeever. Perhaps you two gentlemen could come up for a moment, please. Good morning and welcome to the committee. Gentlemen, what is your position? First of all, I'll ask when you speak to introduce yourselves to the record, and then I'd ask you to comment on the dash one amendments, if you would, please.
Thank you. I'm David Meiton, Executive Director of the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, and this bill was introduced at the request of the commission. It's pre-session filed, and the bill was originally drafted in a manner that it appeared the committee would not find acceptable for a hearing. And so we did work with Representative Przanski in getting some amendments filed as the dash one. Mr. McKeever is with me, who represents our agency from the Attorney General's office, and I'll ask him to speak to the merits.
Very well. Mr. McKeever, hello.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Joel McKeever. I'm the Assistant Attorney General, and I'm assigned counsel to the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. With respect to the dash one amendments, the only thing we believe that these amendments would do would be to give standing to the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission and other professional licensing agencies to go to the court and to make a showing of why it is important for the agency to have access to certain police investigation reports as a way of carrying out our mission to protect students and other and the public from unprofessional conduct of teachers. We believe that under the dash one amendments, there are substantial safeguards to make sure that these records are not simply going to be open to anybody who wants to see them. The court can restrict the way the records are used. And we must first make a showing that there's a necessity for us to see those records. So on that basis, we believe that this is really a fairly small change in the way the expungement statute works at this time. One reason it's important, we believe, for agencies like the Commission to have access to police investigation reports is those reports may contain important information about unprofessional conduct of teachers that that may be in addition to information about a crime for which the defendant has been acquitted. I want to also point out that we're not just dealing with the kinds of somewhat lower-level crimes with which the conviction expungements involve. We're also dealing with situations where a person may be charged with a very serious crime, but for one reason or another, the charges have been dropped or there's been an acquittal.
Are you comfortable with the -1 amendments?
We are.
Very well.
Mr. Chairman.
And I assume you have no comment on the -2, which goes beyond the scope of your inquiry or interest in this legislation?
Chair, that's correct. We do not have.
All right. Thank you very much. Gentlemen, you may stand down unless someone has a question for you. We appreciate that. Mr. Penn, I happen to see you out there, along with Kathy Osborne. I'm going to ask both of you to come up for a minute so we could have a little philosophical discussion about the -2 amendment. I'm just looking in for a couple of minutes. Well, I'll tell you what they are, and then we can talk about it. Mr. Rice is here, too. Mr. Rice, we'll invite you up, although we won't double-team Mr. Penn.
Could we, like, take a break now so I can have a philosophical discussion?
Maybe there'll be an agreement. Who knows? The reason I invited you up is the -2 amendments do something else. They say that you have to wait 5 years after pronouncement of judgment on a misdemeanor to seek expungement, and you have to wait 10 years on a felony to seek expungement. And since that's a significant policy shift, because right now it's 3 years generic. You could say you're not prepared to testify, and that's okay, but I wanted to give you a chance to comment on that since that's in front of us. I'll start with you, Mr. Penn, or you're looking pensive. Do you want Mr. Rice to go first? He looks like he's chomping at
Sure, that'd be great.
Mr. Rice, do you have any comments on that concept?
James Rice, Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. Well, it's a policy choice, really, that we're dealing with here. And one of the things that I look at is employment. I represent a number of people who have committed a crime. I recently represented a young guy. He didn't drink much. I may have even mentioned this case before. Entered a fraternity house, damaged some property at the University of Oregon. Great kid. He took a year off between high school and college. He had basically a 4-point in South Eugene High School. He's now going to go to college. He's a track star. But he entered an occupied dwelling, and he damaged property. That's burglary. That's what he's got on his record right now. The district attorney looked at the case, and we talked about it. Instead of it being an occupied dwelling burglary, he reduced it down one level to still a felony, an unoccupied dwelling. And one of the things I spoke to this young guy about is if he does everything correctly, he'll be eligible to have this matter expunged. This is going to be a working person, but right now he's got a felony on his record, and it's a significant mark. And especially if that felony is burglary. I mean, to the average employer, they're going to look at this guy and go, he's a burglar. Now, the question is, do we want to seal that and prevent cases like that from interfering with someone being employed down the road? And I think that having a period of time where someone really shows themselves, it was an aberration in my life. I've been a law-abiding citizen since then. I've completed my probation. I've done all the things correctly. Sealing that, there's some societal good in doing that. Waiting 10 years is going to preclude him from certain kinds of employment. And I think having a period of time where someone has to prove themselves that it was a one-time thing is valuable. It's against my carrot-and-the-stick approach. It's okay to punish people, but give them something to look forward to in terms of reward. And I think the 10-year period is a long, long period of time.
So you'd suggest we
leave it at 3.
A year long. What do you think, Ms. Osborne?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Kathy Osborne from Juvenile Rights Project. Actually, the expungement statutes for juveniles are different than the expungement statutes for adults. It's actually 5 years for juveniles that they have to wait in order to get expunged, but there is a provision that the court can expunge if the court finds that essentially be in the best interest of society for the juvenile to get it expunged prior to the 5 years. And what I usually find is that the courts will do that for kids only on cases where, for example, the youth wants to join the armed forces and they can't join the armed forces with the juvenile adjudication on their record. Or I've also had cases where the youth wants to go into the Peace Corps and they can't go into the Peace Corps with the adjudication on their record. And I did have one case where a youth was going to get an athletic scholarship and the college said that they wouldn't give the youth the athletic scholarship if the adjudication was still on the record. So I would encourage whatever this committee does with the adult expungement, I would encourage the committee to keep the juvenile expungement the way it is because I think it works well.
And there is no proposal in front of us right now on juvenile expungement. Mr. Penn, any comments from you?
My name is Dale Penn, Marion County District Attorney. The issue that you're talking about, I guess, as it relates to teachers and practices, is the issue that if someone is acquitted, then...
Actually, Mr. Penn, we're okay with that issue, I think. The reason I called you up was, what about
the five or ten?
For 3 years for misdemeanors, 5 years for misdemeanors and 10 years for...
Then if that has nothing to do with this other issue of immediately applying for expungement immediately after an acquittal so people can have access. The one case that I've had that I think 10 years perhaps is too lengthy, just my own personal opinion. There are times when 3 years I think is not enough. And I guess I would say that I think 5 years is a better time. I had
can I
one...
jump in on that? Then what if we just made it 5 years, which is similar to the juvenile provision, and instead change of 3 to 5, but not have a longer time for felonies, just leave it at 5.
I personally believe that is a good proposal. I had one woman who was paroled from OWCC, and she'd done 3 years, and immediately came down and filed an expungement the day she got paroled. And I always thought that there should have been at least some period of time there, but under the statute at that time, that was
awesome. 3 years post-prison supervision?
Well, I think it gets complicated when you throw all these things in there, but I believe 5 years is a good standard amount of time, and yet it doesn't harm someone for some extended period of time, but it does give a little bit of time to demonstrate that they've made a change.
What about, Mr. Chair? Yes, Representative.
A question about sex offenses.
No,
they're not expungible, and this would not have any effect on that. Just wanted to verify
that's
that.
That's a good question.
If I might, Chairman, there's a whole series of serious crimes which aren't expungible, manslaughter, kidnapping, sex offenses, compelling prostitution, things like that. Those are never expungible.
What if we left it? Now, it was pointed out earlier. I mean, let's face it, on the juvenile side, you're not likely to see lower-level misdemeanors involved anyway. What if we, I'm just throwing out one other thought, said leave it at 3 years generally and made it 5 years for the felony side? Of course, you're pointing out, Mr. Rice, you still have the burglar one dropped to burglar two, and he's still going to be prevented with the felony conviction from getting certain kinds of employment.
And that's true. We have a policy choice here. And the question with misdemeanors are, how do we want to treat different things? This really is a policy issue here. Misdemeanors are generally treated in a less serious fashion, although the increasing felonization of crime, there's somewhat less of that, but a two-tiered system reflecting how we treat felonies and misdemeanors might be more appropriate and have a 3-5 split.
I think it's 3 years and then 5 years for felonies.
Mr. Chair, I guess to me this is a discussion. We're going to spend 10 minutes on it and make a decision that I don't think is going to be right for the system. I personally think 3 years because I've had many cases that have come up where defense attorneys have come to me where you've had kids who have just done stupid things. And the reality of, how are they going to be charged? How is it going to affect them? And I've heard two of the people talk about what I wrote down through my notes yesterday. Employment, school loans, and scholarships, all of those are at effect. And
I guess if we're going to have this discussion, I would suggest that we do it during the interim and the complete overhaul of the criminal justice code. It's been 71, I guess, is when we did the code. So I think it's ready for an update, and then we could have a much broader discussion on this as well as many other things.
May I suggest something else the council just pointed out to me? You have a legitimate point there. On the other hand, Mr. Penn's point about someone who is incarcerated, there's some consequence. What if we said 3 years from the date of pronouncement of judgment or released from custody, whichever is later?
That's fine. I mean, to me, that's how I've always have looked at it.
Well, let's do this then. If we have unanimous consent to adopt a conceptual amendment, we could use that instead of the dash 2. Is there any objection to suspension of the rules for purposes of adopting
that? How would that actually relate, Mr. Chair, to, say, 3 and 5?
You might serve 6 months for a felony, and then after you get out in 3 years, you can seek expungement. You might serve 6 years, and after you get out 3 years, you can seek expungement.
It'd be a tack on. So as soon as you complete whatever incarceration period, you'd have another 3 years beyond that if you actually serve time.
And that tends to parallel post-prison supervision, which I think is in 18 months and 36-month segments.
Just one last point. It's a hearing, too. I mean, this is not an automatic thing. This is someone's looking at two sides, and there could be objections in any specific case.
Just protection. Mr. Chair, just for the committee members to understand how this works, the person actually has to submit the fingerprints, put in an application. The district attorney or city attorney has an opportunity to object on the record. They run a check to see if there's any other things that have come up to make sure someone's not trying to push one through. And then the court, in its the final decision, or has the final decision.
All right.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to know what TFCP thinks about that, if we could.
Fine. Who did you want to ask up?
Dr. Mighton.
Probably Joe McKeever.
Mr. McKeever. While they're coming up, is there objection to suspension of the rule? I haven't heard any objections, so we may proceed with the conceptual amendment if that's appropriate. Do you gentlemen have any comment on the idea of saying that the time frame is 3 years from the date of pronouncement of judgment or release from custody, whichever is later, as the trigger for when you get to start looking for expungement? It doesn't affect your dash one amendment.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we would have no problem with the amendment as described.
All right.
And question, Mr. Chair, if we, in looking at the dash twos, though, if we changed it to 5 years, would that give you a broader background to be able to search that might be a better situation for TSCP?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sinceri, frankly, we're mostly concerned with the problem of a situation where there's been an arrest and no conviction. Generally, if there's been a conviction, if we haven't dealt with it within 3 years, we're probably not doing our job very well.
All right. Then I would entertain a motion from Representative Sinceri that we adopt a conceptual amendment to add to House Bill 2096 on page 1, line 6, after the word judgment, the phrase, or release from custody, comma, whichever is later, comma. Do you not want to be the one who makes that motion? Representative Przanski makes the motion. So, colleagues, the motion is to make that amendment. Is there discussion on that amendment? Is there objection?
I object.
All right, there's objection. Please call the roll on the amendment, which is to add the phrase, or release from custody, whichever is later, after the word judgment on line 6 of page 1 of the bill.
Representative Bowman?
Yes.
Representative Gianella?
Aye.
Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Representative Sinceri?
No.
Vice Chair Przanski?
Aye.
Chair Mannix?
Aye. The motion is carried. The amendment is adopted. Representative Przanski, could you move the dash one amendments?
Yes. Right. I will put them out there.
All right. Representative Przanski moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 2096.
Mr. Chair, I think for discussion purposes, my comfort is that it does actually allow them to petition the court and that the court will have an in-camera inspection before those records are reopened for at anyone's whim.
All right. In effect, it's a limiting amendment on the original bill.
I'm the hard guy.
No. In the sense that you set up a process.
Can't please you.
The process has always been there. I think it makes clarity that these agencies, as Mr. McKeever says, will have standing to come in to petition the court.
All right. Is there any objection to adoption of the dash one amendments? Seeing no objection, the dash one amendments are adopted. Do I have a motion on the bill to send to the floor of a due pass as amended?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2096 as amended to the floor of a due pass.
Colleagues, thank you, Representative Bowman. You have all heard the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection? Seeing no objection, the motion is carried. House Bill 2096 is sent to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Volunteer for a carrier. Representative Bowman will be the carrier. Thank you. This concludes the work session on House Bill 2096. Next up is House Bill 3044. I understand some amendments arrived this morning. We'll go into work session. Oh, no, they didn't. We're waiting for them. We're waiting for amendments, aren't we?
Dash two.
Dash two.
Mr. Swank's proposals. I did talk to Mr. DeLashman yesterday. There was something prepared in rough form by Mr. Swank from the Supreme Court Administrator's Office, State Court Administrator's Office. So we will carry over 3044 to tomorrow or Thursday, depending on whether those amendments are drafted. Mr. DeLashman indicated relative comfort, not necessarily happiness, but comfort with the amendments, assuming that they're done properly. And we'll take a look at those tomorrow or the day after. We'll go back to... trying to see if I have two folders here for some reason. Nope. 2996, which was third on the agenda. 2996. Oh, Representative Jensen does not want to proceed, and I guess Karen Brazeau, are you there? No.
I informed her that.
So, unless somebody comes up with some dramatic reason for proceeding with House Bill 2996, we had a number of difficulties with that, and Mr. Representative Jensen was given a chance to work with Karen Brazeau on it.
They just couldn't resolve the conflicts in the bill?
Counsel, go ahead.
If I could, and I haven't spoken with Representative Jensen directly, but I did speak with his legislative assistant as well as Karen Brazeau, and my understanding is that after some discussion, Ms. Brazeau was able to show the legislative assistant why current law really does enable them to take care of the problem that was brought up in the bill. It does. And so a legislative fix apparently at this point is not needed.
All right. So we will open a work session on 2996 and we will close the work session on 2996. Colleagues, I want to ask you about something else that's not on the agenda for today, I don't think. 2983. And I'll just give you a heads up. I did receive a memorandum. You don't have it in front of you, probably. It's not on the agenda, but I want you to be aware of this. I did receive a memorandum from Representative Morissette asking about a work session on 2983. This is the bill that said that youth who have committed crimes who are on probation, there is going to be restrictions placed on their homes and their parents and custodians. I'll simply mention to you that we had this come up last week, and nobody seemed to be interested in pursuing it. At least I thought it did. But I'm just going to let you know, Representative Morissette has inquired about this. If you will take a look at your bills and your folders back in your offices, let me know if you think this bill has legs.
Would you reiterate that, Mr. Chair? You said that the parent and guardian and...
I'll read his memo because I don't have the bill in front of me. House Bill 2983 is based on the principle that youth have committed crimes should have immediate and tangible restrictions on their access to guns during probation, both for their safety and for that of their community. The bill prohibits juvenile offenders on probation from having access to guns. It requires parents and custodians of juvenile offenders to use trigger locks on all firearms and store them in locked containers. Maybe we didn't talk about that last week.
I don't think we did, Mr. Chair, but I know we looked at it during the firearms week and a half, and the bottom line is what I think Representative Morissette's trying to do is put some limitations on the access to the youth that has been adjudicated through the juvenile court, and so it would be restrictions as to within the household that they reside.
On the parents.
Certain safeguards are going to have to be put in place under the bill.
And right now, the court already has that authority if it wants to. This would mandate it. I think the court would, if they were putting someone on probation saying...
I would think they probably, I think through the juvenile system, they probably would, because they do have in the best interest of the child, and they can actually outreach to the parents or the guardians, wherever the child is residing, and put those type of restrictions.
Mr. Chair, not only no legs, but no breath of life.
Okay. Out of deference to Representative Morissette, I brought that up, and there it is. Okay.
I like the concept.
I like the concept, too. I think one committee member's no breath of life is another one who's breathing life into it as we speak.
I breathe.
Wow.
You breathe?
You can develop the concept, and next session we'll probably come up with something.
I will pull the bill up and take a look at possibly...
Because that sounds different.
In fact, let's do this. Let's set it Thursday. Full men discussions. I'd like to look at the related clause.
2983, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Okay. Remember that when you open Pandora's box, other things can fly out, too.
Or fly in.
Or fly in.
Sure.
Yes.
What is the current law as it would relate to that issue?
If you have a juvenile who's on probation, the court can issue an order about what goes on in the home.
I hope they can.
Documented there already. In other words, the court at this point has discretion. The other way, we would take that discretion away. So do we want judicial discretion, or don't we? And we'll remember for other bills in the future as to what discretion we have or we don't.
All right. Here's what I'm going to do. I am not going to set this.
Good call.
That's the end of that. All right. House Bill 3395, I understand that amendments are not in yet.
Correct, Mr. Chairman.
So we will have to set over that bill.
Let me slope this here down.
Well, Representative Przanski, do you have your amendments on 3057?
Yes, they're here.
All right. House Bill 3057 is now in front of us, and we'll go into work session on House Bill 3057. And the mysterious Przanski amendments will now go alike.
Three sets?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Regarding this bill, this is one of the bills that we have in front of us that had a pretty nice relating clause. Actually, it's called Relating the Crime. And because of that, there are three sets of amendments. I had others that were going to be drafted, but decided we'd go with these three. And I'm asking the committee to look at all individually. They're dash 5, dash 6, and dash 7. And starting with the dash...
Can we pause for a minute, though? They're still being distributed, okay. And I will ask you to explain them, but I'm also going to ask Mr. Horton to tell us where we are with the bill as it is now, to bring people up to speed.
Sure. Just a moment, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. And then we'll hear from Representative Przanski. Because we previously have the dash 4, dash 3, dash 2, and dash 1 amendments.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may, the only... As far as the dash 1, 2, 3, and 4, the only amendments the committee would need to consider would be the dash 4. Those are the identity theft bills, and they would replace the dash 1, dash 2, and dash 3.
All right. So the base issue in the bill, as it's been brought back up to the Przanski amendments, is the dash 4 amendments. What we had was we had a bill from Representative Beyer relating to identity theft, and in hearing the testimony and working up the bill, we found that some changes were needed. And we found that that bill's relating clause was too narrow to get the job done, as I recall. So we moved over. We found another one of his bills, which was actually a narrower bill with a broader relating clause. And we've not had anybody in here demanding that we proceed on mineral trespass and interfering with mining operations. So we are proposing a gut and stuff to start things off. Then we're going to get to the Przanski amendments, which are adds to the bill.
That's correct. Does not delete.
So the dash 4 amendments are gut and stuff to put in the identity theft compromise that we put together based on Representative Beyer's proposal. So let me first ask if there's a motion to adopt the dash 4 amendments to 3057. Mm-hmm. Representative Hansen moves adoption of the dash 4 amendments. These are the identity theft amendments. Is there discussion on that motion? Is there objection? All right, the dash 4 amendments are adopted. Now, Representative Przanski, you have some amendments.
I do.
Mr. Chair and committee members, dash five is one that came from the Florence Police Department. What it basically says is that if an individual takes a something in to be copied in the sense of photographs, videotapes, or sound recordings, you entrust that to an individual to make copies. What you're not asking them to do is make copies for themselves. The police department down there uses, I guess, or has used individual retailers or businesses to do some of their work for crime scene. And what they've found is that at least in one particular situation where an individual is actually taking crime photographs and making copies of those photographs and keeping them for themselves. And so we looked at the person that is handling their work while I'm out here in Salem, brought this to my attention that they did not find anything that is currently in law. So what we looked at was that the crime of misapplication of entrusted property and expanding it to where an individual who basically has received these properties with a specific mission that they are not able to capitalize on making copies for themselves. So that's what we're asking this committee to consider, understanding that this has no impact on the dash fours. It's basically just going to close a loophole. And I guess the thing is, what I would say is that if you took your photographs in to a place, I don't think many of us would want them to be making extra copies for their own use for whatever that might be. So that's what why we have the dash fives in front of us.
All right. And Representative Brzezinski, you're proposing actually we need to technically change the dash five so that they are added to the bill, not substituting.
That is the intent. All of these are supposed to be additions. They are not to any way undo the dash fours, which I expect will be adopted.
All right. So the motion, if I may state it as I would hope you would make it, is that the dash five amendments be added to the bill and that the dash five amendments be corrected so that they are additions to the bill rather than substitutions.
That's correct.
All right, we have that motion. Do you so move?
I do.
We have that motion in front of us. I don't know if any folks out there have seen the dash fives. They look fairly straightforward, basically adding to the code misapplication of entrusted property. If the person intentionally and without the express consent of the owner makes duplicate copies of photographs, videotapes, or sound recordings that have been entrusted to the person.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I mean, so does that mean that if I take pictures at my cousin's wedding and I go off and make 20 sets of it and send it all across the country that I'm in violation of this law?
No. What it means is if the photo finisher makes spare copies of those pictures of your beautiful sister and puts them up on his bulletin board without your permission, he's violated the law. The idea being that you take your videotape somewhere and say, I want this copied, and the owner of the shop makes his own personal copy, or the photo finisher makes a set of prints for their own use without getting your permission. And Mr. Sterrett, did you want to have something to say about this? Come on forward, since this is a novel issue.
While he's coming, Mr. Chair, I wonder if I could just ask the Vice Chair, what's the scope of this problem? I mean, how big is this problem? I'm not sure I've even heard that it's a problem.
Well, I guess I thought I'd mention that. I mean, it is a problem, at least for law enforcement in the city of Florence, where someone has actually taken property that belongs to them as crime scene evidence of some pretty gruesome pictures, from my understanding, and taken them for their own use. They also, my understanding, is they served a search warrant and found photographs of people or children partially clothed that had been, I guess, entrusted to them from, you know, the family. And so, you know, I think there is a problem. It may not be one that's getting headlines throughout the state or through the country, but it seems to me we've got a potential here where someone's getting something that they're not supposed to be getting, and for whatever purpose, gratification or whatever.
Mr. Sterrett, you have
Kevin Sterrett, my private citizen's hat. I was a commercial photographer for 20 years, and I believe this is all covered under copyright law. If I bring a photograph into a Kinko's, they can't copy it without. I've had people, as a matter of fact, when I was doing photographs during the campaign season for people running for office, and they wanted to duplicate their picture, they would call me from a Kinko's, not being permitted to photocopy the picture without me faxing them a written letter saying that I own the copyright and they couldn't do it.
Well, I'll ask Representative Brzezinski to comment on that.
Yeah, the problem I would say, Mr. Sterrett, is that as we've, have you've been sitting here with us through these committees, number one, the feds are not going to be dealing with that, and there would be a civil action type of approach that you might be able to do. And it seems to me that when you go to a vendor for services, they are, to me, a little bit different position than somebody else that's...
Yeah, and I'm not objecting to the law. I just didn't know, want to make it clear that there was something that dealt with this already.
I would agree that copyright coverage probably exists, but I'd also add that, for instance, government doesn't always have the same rights as to copyright as to someone else, and if the police are having their crime scene photographs processed at your local lab, granted, they could probably go to another lab in some towns, and sometimes they have one lab available. Second of all, this allows for sanctions, so people all have noticed ahead of time you better not do this kind of thing. I mean, my attitude is this is wrongful conduct. Why should we excuse it?
Oh, and I agree with that. I just wanted to make the...
I appreciate that, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
You.
Representative Gianella.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I understand what he's saying about law enforcement, and I would be more comfortable if it just listed it that it was for law enforcement. But on line 11, it says the government.
Well, that's a separate. That's current law. So line 7 through 11 are already law.
Those are already law.
And I guess it's arguable that you didn't convert the property to your use because while it was in the machine, you made two prints instead of one. Depends on your comfort level. That's what we're here for. Yes.
Without more testimony, the thought came to me, as was brought up by Mr. Sterrett. I have a sister that's a professional photographer, and it concerns me. This is pretty broad. If we narrowed this this issue a little bit better, I would be more comfortable.
Such as makes duplicate copies of government-owned?
Mr. Chair,
most of that is evidence, isn't it?
Yeah, I think if you start trying to do it for government, because that then you're talking about stuff that could be within the public domain.
And let me try to explain. I think the concern, Representative Simmons, that you're expressing is probably not, I'm going to say, warranted in due respect, is because if your sister is actually, or any photographer, is making photographs, it's going to be their property. And so you're basically going to be protecting their property if this should go, let's say, for whatever reason, she doesn't do own the Arkham work or if her machines are down and she has a prize-winning photograph. She should not be concerned that if she takes it someplace to be developed, that they're going to make a copy for their own use and behalf. And so really the person that is the owner of that film is being protected by this, and it's not going to be putting a photographer at risk unless someone gave them something to do and then they made copies for themselves without getting permission from an individual that entrusted the property. This is, to me, basically trying to make certain that the person who is the rightful owner of whatever property is being submitted for duplication or for production has the final say and control over who gets copies of that. And so that's pretty much it.
Mr. Rice has indicated a desire to be heard. Come on up, Mr. Rice.
Good morning, members of the committee. Chairman Mannix, Chairman Rice, Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. I guess I'm a little concerned with the breadth of this. I, too, of course, am a photographer. And I also use photographs a number of ways. I make copies of things. I make copies, for example, I get an X-ray at times and want to use it as an exhibit rather than use a view box. I make positives out of them. I've even been known to Xerox off articles from newspapers and send them to people. Sometimes
the Xerox Corporation would be unhappy if you're using the word Xerox instead of photocopy.
Photocopy, correct. Good point. I don't need trouble from people that big. What I'm concerned with here is I looked up, trying to find in words and phrases here, the term entrusted, and I can't find what that means. So it's hard to say if the doctor entrusts me with his X-ray, and doctors insist that they physically own the X-ray themselves, not the patient. that I don't have permission to Xerox it. I just see that there's a breadth problem here, and I understand what Representative Brzezinski is getting at with gruesome crime scene pictures and not wanting those things distributed or children or whatever else, but we're really in a very, very broad area here that poses potential constitutional problems and also putting people on notice that they're not supposed to be doing this. And I just raise those breadth issues, and that would conclude my remarks.
There is a bill currently, a statute about unlawful sound recording.
And unlawful videotape recording, which... Mr. Chairman, does not. Those statutes have to do when it is reproduced for sale without the consent of the owner, but it does cover these situations to an extent.
I guess the rock concert situation. Also, videotaping of police officers at scenes sometimes. There's been a number of those cases that have cropped up.
Well, I need to give my colleague a heads up that I've gotten cold feet.
Well, I've got ice, actually.
Do you withdraw your motion on dash 5?
Sure.
Why not? All right. The motion on dash 5 is withdrawn. And now, you have
Since it's being withdrawn, that brings it to a nice close. But I think it is something that we should be aware of and maybe put on a watch list for next session or something.
There are weird things that happen.
I've got grandkids and some grandkid pictures that were the cute little pictures on the bearskin skin rug type thing that are very precious to our family. On the other hand, if those pictures had ended up on the internet on a kiddie porn site, it would be an incredible invasion into our family's privacy, and I think it's a concern. And I think it's a privacy concern that we should be at least aware of.
I don't think we're suggesting that this is an issue that should go away, but our problem is grappling with it at this time in this fashion. All right, President Brzezinski, your dash 6 amendments?
Dash 6 basically makes a clarification to the controlled substance law regarding what is or what isn't marijuana. Basically, what this would do is just take industrial hemp out from the definition of marijuana.
All right, did you want to move the dash 6 amendment?
I would say, why not?
All right, Representative Brzezinski moves the dash 6 amendments, which would basically pull industrial hemp or products made from industrial hemp from the controlled substances.
Quick, let's vote.
Your discussion on the motion.
Yes.
Go ahead, Representative Jean Mellon.
I would feel better if we struck the line 2, 3, and 4 from page 2 of the amendment.
Well,
that's the amendment.
I think she's a no.
I think we better. Is there any further discussion? The clerk will call the roll on the motion.
You sense some disagreement with this motion.
To adopt that.
Representative Bowman?
Yeah, why not?
Representative Cannella?
No.
No. Don't listen to this.
Representative Hand?
Yes.
Representative Simmons?
No.
Representative Sunseri?
No.
Vice Chair Brzezinski?
Yes.
Chair
Manning? No, the motion is defeated. Representative Brzezinski, do you want to take a shot at dash 7?
Yes, lucky number 7, we hope. This is one that actually goes in with the bill on the dash 4s. I know Mr. McKee's here, and he's probably going to want to speak to the bill or to the amendment. I want to take you back to the testimony we had from Representative Beyer and his constituent, Linda Wilson. Linda Williams. She talked about one of the problems she had when her identity had been stolen, of trying to keep it from continuing to flourish, as to where people were continuing to get information out and trying to shut off the floodgates. What the Dash 7's attempts to do is to basically hold a person accountable who would be producing or uttering, which would mean transmitting, a consumer report or an investigative consumer report of a person where that information is in dispute. And the concern that I've heard from this individual as well as other individuals who have had this problem
again, is that the information is, they will raise the concern to the agency, and in some cases, that information will still be distributed to other inquirers. And what we're trying to do is keep that information from being put forward until the dispute is actually resolved. And the reason that we've approached it this way is because at this point, we felt that this is the way, because the person that has control over sending out the reports is the agencies that actually put them together. And so what this would do is basically hold those individuals who do issue a disputed consumer report or a disputed investigative consumer report to a Class B misdemeanor. Again, the goal is basically to make certain whatever disputes that are out there on someone's credit history or credit reports is dealt with before more adverse reports are sent out to other people. And I just felt that looking at the testimony that we had, we had another bill that we were trying to address some of this in that did not make it through the process, and that this was a way that we could give victims of identity theft the ability to try to keep the information from being distributed on, even though that's in dispute.
Representative Hansen.
I was a little more comfortable with the industrial hemp. I think this is a very valid issue, and I'd like to see it addressed, but I don't know whether criminalizing it is the way to go. But it would seem to me that if that this would be something that civil action against somebody that's sending out a disputed report, subjecting them to liabilities and theft for spreading would be better than.
Mr. Chair,
I'm
just curious now, current law, isn't there a process that if you dispute something on your credit report, that if the credit agency sends out your credit report, they also have to send out your dispute or acknowledge that you, in fact, have filed a something that says that you don't agree with what's on the report? Aren't they required by law currently?
They are required to note on the credit report that there is a challenge to a particular item that is in dispute.
So, I mean, but they're still allowed to send out the report, but they're also supposed to notify the person they're sending it to that there's a dispute. And so if they send it out under current law, if this passed, then that would be criminal behavior?
Yes.
Even though you send both pieces out?
Do you have a motion on this? Or?
No.
All right.
Let's go back to the industrial hemp.
We
reconsider Dash 6.
We now have the bill in front of us as amended with the Dash 4 amendment. If Representative Simmons wants to move to send it to the Ways and Means Committee, there is a fiscal impact for the due
pass.
Yes,
forecast.
Mr.
Chair, I did have a question about the Dash 6. How does it affect products that are currently made from, you know, shoes and some stuff? Isn't there a few products on the market?
There are. There's a lot of products. It just gives clarification because of currently, as we probably know from some of the discussions happening in this body, education needs to be put out there. And this is one way of distinguishing and making certain that it's not somehow caught in that broader definition. But yeah, I mean, I've actually
wearing your hemp shirt today.
Got a lip gloss and a wallet. So,
if I could ask a question on the same topic, since
let me make. Did I hear Representative Simmons move to send the bill to the floor? Excuse me, to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation, as amended with the Dash 4 amendments.
I think he's still worried about rolling his own shoelaces.
The bill does not presently address hemp one way or another.
Right.
Representative Bowman?
My question is, can you be prosecuted, or is there a process now to prosecute people for having hemp products, for having possession of marijuana?
Well, I would say I've not seen that happen, but there's, because the definition does not exempt industrial hemp per se, that this is more for clarification.
The chair is sympathetic to Representative Brzezinski's concern about industrial hemp, but since this is not the Agriculture Committee and we've not had an opportunity to hear all these issues, I would be concerned about proceeding with that issue.
Oh, come on. Where's the spirit here? The American way, George Washington had hemp farms. The Declaration of Independence was drafted on industrial hemp.
Anything further, Representative Brzezinski? We have a motion pending to send the bill to Ways and Means for the due pass as amended by the Dash 4 amendments, which means we'd have the identity theft bill done. We'll call the roll on that motion, please.
Representative Bowman?
Yes.
Representative Gianella?
Yes.
Representative?
Yes.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Representative Steinberg?
Yes.
Vice Chair Brzezinski?
Aye.
Chair Mann?
Aye. Motion carries. House Bill 3057 is sent.
How about the dash 8?
Sorry. The gavel has dropped.
Mr. Chair, I just want to be able to sign donuts for people who, you know, like take up 30 minutes of the...
Well, you have a three-amendment limit per day. All right. I better not say that.
I think that's true.
This closes the work session on House Bill 3057. By the way, we'll probably need to make a list of bills that went to Ways and Means so I could put on my penitent cloak and go to the chair of Ways and Means and make sure these get set. We haven't sent some money that it's inappropriate for us to press for all of them to be considered. Next up is House Bill 2432. I went to work session on 2432 and asked counsel to advise us where we are.
Mr. Chairman, this has been before the committee several times, and I understand that the various concerned parties regarding this bill have come to some agreement, which are encapsulated in the Dash 1 amendments, and they may want to address them.
All right. Gentlemen, you want to come forward and tell us where we are on 2432? We are in work session.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Paul Snyder with the Association of Oregon Counties, and I believe what counsel said is correct, Mr. Chair, that we have agreement between the department and the association concerning the amendments. What the amendments would do would be to insert the words effective blank 2000, and that is to identify a specific date, which I don't know yet, but I understand would be sometime around September 1st of the year 2000. And I'll explain more about this in just a moment. And then delete the reference to $65 per day and instead insert $63.44 per day as adjusted in subsequent biennia for the current service level. What this means to me, and I wrote it, is that we come up with $78.11 per day for jail based on the surveys that the Department of Corrections conducted, that this constitutes an average daily cost per day for jails. In addition to that, we take the number $19.43 per day, and that is, based on similar surveys, the cost of supervision. Multiply the $78.11 times 3 because the formula that was used originally with this process was based on an assumption that on any given day, 75% of the offenders that we're discussing here will be in jail and 25% will be on supervision. So we multiply that $78.11 by 3, add the $19.43 and divide it by 4, and I came up with $63.44. And pass that number on to Legislative Fiscal Office and the Department of Corrections, and so far everybody in these places are saying, yeah, okay, that's right. I'm not a mathematician. I feel very uncomfortable doing this sort of thing, but they are. So I trust that this was done correctly. So the net effect of this, although actual county practice indicates that jails are being used more than the distribution formula contemplated. I believe that's a subject for another forum for another day, and we're dealing with that with the implementation committee and the department. So my sense of the purpose of the bill was to come up with a clarification of how we reach the number as to how much money the counties would receive is accomplished by these amendments. And the reason for the blank is we had originally discussed with respect to this bill that the funding would move to actual county costs when we know what the actual county costs are. Although we know what they are now, there are other fiscal considerations going on in the building. And so I'm not aware that at the present time there is adequate funding to do this for
Well, this bill has to go to Ways and Means anyway, so you can make that argument to Ways and Means.
That would be fine, Mr. Chair. So what this does is we're assuming as of the moment that probably the date that would be inserted in here based upon the amount of money that's under active consideration would be September 1st of the year 2000, but we don't know that for sure.
Well, we can put it in and then send it to Ways and Means and let them play with it, but or leave it blank.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I was going to suggest, why don't we just move it as it is, because it's got to go to Ways and Means. That's going to give the parties more time. They're going to have to make the discussion or arguments when it comes down there, so the dollars and the date.
You want to make a brief comment?
Yes, please. Scott Taylor, Assistant Director, Department of Corrections. I'm in agreement with most of what Mr. Schneider says. We are in agreement with this amendment. I do want to correct one piece. The 1943 is not for supervision. It's for alternative sanctions. So when we move people out of custody, we have, as we present this stuff later on, it gets confusing. So I want to clarify those two terms. Sorry we took so long working on this. We as a department were trying to look at a way of putting a cap on this amount of money so it wouldn't grow forever. We believe we have some methods, and we've been working on our 2575 and another thing we call a leveler and some other stuff that really reduces any one county or anybody running these numbers up beyond what they really need to do.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Representative Przanski, do you move the dash one amendments, leaving the date blank?
Yes.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Is there an objection? Seeing objection, the dash one amendments.
I move the bill as amended to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Is there objection? Seeing no objection, the motion is carried, and House Bill 2432, as amended with the dash one amendments, is sent to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you
all. This concludes the work session on House Bill 2432. We will take a 10-minute rest break. Recess for 10 minutes.
Cool. All right. Oh,